10:05 a.m. and I am Brady Kreitzer.
Okay, my name is Joan Carol Kondraty, although everybody here at Slippery Rock knows me as Jace. That's a nickname that I've had for probably 30 years now. And I was born June 13th, 1952. That was a Friday 13th. And I'm from Allentown, Pennsylvania. My education, I have a BA in English from Gettysburg College and a Master of Science in Counseling Student Personnel from Shippensburg State College, and then a PhD in English, Rhetoric and Linguistics from, from IUP.
Okay. Let me ask you about sort of your affiliation with the university from the beginning, if you could.
Well, I was hired in 1981 to work in the Department of Academic Support Services. I actually underwent two interviews. The first interview, I interviewed for an Act 101 counseling position in the department. Act 101 is a state program for educationally underprepared students. And I did not get that position. My dear friend and colleague, Reverend Will Haddon, who was an inside candidate, got that position. But then, apparently, I had done well enough at the interview that when another position opened, three-quarter time director of the tutoring center and one-quarter time teaching a basic skills course in the English department, when that opened up, they called me and asked if I would like to interview for that. I interviewed for that position, and I was then hired. I don't remember exactly when I transitioned from academic support services to the English department, but I do know it happened after I completed my PhD, and so that was probably sometime shortly after 1991.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You sort of saw both sides of things. Which, you know, looking back, which did you prefer in terms of working for Slippery Rock?
You mean which department?
Yeah.
Well, I, in fact, was very, in some ways, very, very sad to leave my home department. I had kind of grown up in higher education in that mm-hmm. department. I had actually come to Slippery Rock after having worked for 7 years as an English teacher in a junior high school, 8th and 9th grade. And Academic Support Services was my first experience being a faculty member. And there were some absolutely wonderful individuals in that department who really mentored me along and actually helped me, I believe, earn all of my promotions. And I had started as an instructor, so I had several promotions to go through. But I also had watched other colleagues in the department leave the department and go on to other departments after they completed their PhD. So I assumed that was somewhere in my future. But I still wasn't prepared for it, even though I had completed my PhD and I was overloading myself in such a way that I could no longer perform all of the responsibilities of my originally performed position, my originally assigned position. So I was sad to leave, and in fact, the first conversation I had with my dean at the time, who was Bob Watson, about leaving the department, we had had a meeting because I was trying to figure out a way that I could direct the tutoring center, teach in the English department, chair the women's studies program, and teach an intro to women's studies course. And I thought I had a plan to do that. His plan, however, was that it was time for me to move into the English department where I would have some more flexibility. And he told me to come back and make another appointment after thinking about that. And when I left his office to walk back down to the library, I actually started to cry because I thought, oh, it's time to do this, and I don't know if I'm ready to leave this group of people. And in fact, I did not make another appointment to talk with the team. But I let the word trickle through to me that the English department had conducted a vote and accepted me into the department, and then it was just a mere formality. So I obviously have had some deep, both professional and emotional ties mm-hmm. to that department. But I've also come to also really enjoy working with the English department. I have a lot of you know, friends who are colleagues there, and it's exciting to be so focused on pedagogy and to be around people, you know, who can understand my enthusiasm and passion for the discipline that I'm trained mm-hmm. in. So I've also enjoyed that department very much as well. I recently was elected to be department chair. I'm hoping I can maintain that positive feeling towards all my colleagues.
Kind of looking at the university, it seems like the English department has just so many more faculty members mm-hmm. than a lot of the departments. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's because we're the only department on campus, and in fact, from what I understand, the only department in the state system that has three courses that all students are required to take, mm-hmm. College Writing 1, College Writing 2, and Interpreting Literature. So when you have the entire university, or, you know, 95% of it, mm-hmm. you know, moving through your department, you need a lot of faculty members to teach, and that's why primarily.
Okay. All right, we went through some transitions here as a campus. Mm-hmm. You see we have listed Teachers College, State College, mm-hmm. University. Do you have any particular memories, you know, good or bad, of these kind of transition periods?
Well, I do remember there was a lot of pomp and circumstance around the transition for Slippery Rock and all the other state system schools to becoming a university. And I can remember a number of us, myself included, not knowing exactly what that meant. I thought it was something of a superficial name change in order to have a state system of higher education. But I myself was not directly involved. This was my second year. I was probably just getting involved in my doctoral program. And while I knew it was happening and we were undergoing this transition, it wasn't anything I was directly involved in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We mentioned the department a little bit. Mm-hmm. You kind of talked about how that changed, you know, mm-hmm. while you're involved.
Yes. Well, I know that Academic Support Services is now called Academic Services, but I wasn't there as that name changed. And I guess most of the changes I remember are the people who left the department. You know, like Dr. Harry Budd, who was the director of Act 101 when I came and was essentially the person on whose grant I was hired. Mm-hmm. I was grant funded for a while. I remember when he left, I remember when Will Haddon, who was a good colleague and was actually the minister who married my husband and me, you know, retired. I remember when Ann Kemmerer left to go to counseling. It wasn't called counseling and development, it was counseling and psych. And when my good friend Champ Storch retired, so those were very hard transitions for me because it was like all my good buddies were leaving the university. Mm-hmm. It really knocks it out of you just a little bit and place changes in significant ways. My sense about the department was that it was becoming also more administrative in nature. It seemed less like an academic department and more like an administrative unit to me, which I also thought was a kind of a sad transition. Now, I don't know if the faculty who are currently in the department feel that way, mm-hmm. but that's what I felt was happening there. And that, I think, merged as part of changes in leadership as well. Now, the English department has also changed. I have to say that when I first became involved with it, quarter time, I taught College Writing 1 or College Writing 2, one section of the semester. And I would always attend their department meetings just because I thought that was a responsible thing to do. The faculty within that department weren't very happy with one another. Mm-hmm. My sense was that there was a lot of a lot of conflict, professional and personal, among individuals, and department meetings would get quite heated sometimes. And I remember thinking I just wanted to keep my head low and hope nobody noticed mm-hmm. me. So I didn't really participate very much. And it's even difficult for me to determine where the fault lines were. I mean, some departments, English departments, get split between lit people and writing people, but I'm not even sure that that was it. I didn't mm-hmm. quite know enough. But by the time I became a full-time member of the department, it seemed as though, again, some individuals had retired and there was some new leadership and the department seemed to be emerging into a more cohesive whole where people seemed to respect and liked each other quite a bit. In fact, I think the second or third year I was in the department full-time, the new chair of the department turned out to be a good friend of mine. So I felt very much at ease and had found people within the department who shared my educational background. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the department has grown to become sort of more cohesive. I guess that's all I'll say about that.
Okay, that's all right. That's wonderful. What buildings did you work in while you were on campus?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, my very first office was in Maltby Center in the basement, the lower level. And the tutoring center was down there, and I had my office down there. And then we moved, and that's where Academic Support Services was located. And then the tutoring center moved to the second floor, the first floor, next floor up. And my office was, I'm not even sure what's in there now. Maybe admissions is in there now. Mm-hmm. And then the department was moved over into the library, and I was the first one to go. So it was me in a corner and the tutoring center, and my department was still back in Maltby. It was that way for almost a year, I think. And then, and I was teaching. The English department had its offices in ECB, Eisenberg, and so I was teaching a class there. By the time I became a full-time member of the department, we had moved over into Spotswold Cultures building. Mm-hmm. And up until actually just this January, I think we were the only department left on campus that was sharing offices that were about this size. So we have a new suite of offices, and all tenured faculty members, tenured and tenure track faculty members, have their own offices. So that's been a nice transition to be a part of.
Okay. You mentioned when you first came here, you worked, you didn't have your PhD and things
no.
like that. Was that part of your plan to go back and start doctoral work, or was it being in the university setting that influenced you to kind of do that?
Oh, it was definitely being in the university setting. I came, of course, with a completed master's degree plus additional credits, because when you're in the public school, you get pay raises for continuing your education, and I've always liked being a student, so that was mm-hmm. That was not a hardship for me. I really liked my master's degree work, but my department chair, Champ Storch, said that the key to progressing professionally at the university was having your PhD, and I needed to find a PhD program. And again, I was really torn. I wasn't sure whether I wanted to look more at the counseling end of things, since I was advising a lot of students, and I was in more of my responsibilities were sort of student services oriented. I was only teaching one writing class, or whether I wanted to do doctoral work in English. And it was a very pragmatic decision made on the basis of money and distance. And I had worked with a professor from Shippensburg University in a summer program during my master's program while I was teaching at Gettysburg Junior High School. And the summer program turned out to be the Act 101 program. And he had spoken glowingly of, I really admired him as a teacher. He was doing things in the classroom which were very unlike anything else I had witnessed. I admired him a lot. And he spoke very glowingly of the program at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. That's where he had gotten his training. So because Indiana University was closer by, and I believe in the contract we already had some maybe tuition remission built in to some degree, I went to IUP for the program in rhetoric and linguistics, because that it was that program rather than their lit program that focused on the teaching of writing. I thought, well, this is what I'm doing, I'm teaching writing. Other options were to go to Pittsburgh or to Youngstown for counseling. And I was a little bit of a chicken about driving in and out of Pittsburgh. I had gone with a colleague, and the traffic was horrendous. She could never find a parking place. All she did was to bitch and moan about it the whole time, about why would I want to go down to Pittsburgh to complete doctoral work. And Youngstown just seemed a little bit too far away. And so I wound up with going to IUP in their rhetoric and linguistics program. And I mean, that was good advice that I got from Champ, because I think that there is, I mean, it's common, right? Most all faculty members have their PhDs. Not all of them, but most of them do. And so you would think that you wouldn't pay attention to something that everybody has, but there is some subtle, I don't know, respect or acknowledgement or expectation that you have that degree. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very happy that I completed it. The program was very oriented towards working professionals, so it had a lot fewer hoops that you had to jump through. And a lot of what I learned there, I could apply directly to my classroom, which I thought was wonderful. I thought it really helped me become a much more informed and better teaching, particularly in the composition classroom. So, you know, I like to say about myself that I have far exceeded anything that I ever hoped for or planned for myself. I came out of a family where neither of my parents completed high school. They were very old-fashioned and thought that if they were going to send anybody to college, it would be the boy in the family. I have a brother, younger by a year. He wasn't interested. They had many misgivings about sending a girl to college. And completing my college degree and getting a job as a teacher was just way beyond anything in my family or their families had done. Mm-hmm. And then finding myself a faculty member and completing a PhD was like, wow, I never expected to be here. So,
okay. As you know, you still worked throughout your doctoral program. How long was that take?
10 years.
Really?
Yeah, it took me 10 years of taking a course every fall and every spring and maybe on, I guess, every summer. And then it took me a while to complete the dissertation as well. Mm-hmm. So it took a long time.
Okay. When you're familiar with the state system, you said yes. Shippensburg and things like that.
Yes.
What were your first impressions of SRU when you came?
Wow. Well, I was obviously very impressed, because I just didn't expect to find myself at a college then and eventually a university. And I found it, well, first of all, the size. I mean, it's when you're moving from working in a junior high school to working in a university, but you're just being confronted by the size of the place. But I found it to be a very welcoming and warm place immediately. Mm-hmm. I was renting a house out in the country, and apparently came a day or two sooner than the landlady expected, and she hadn't turned the water on. I had no water. So I came into school and talked with the secretary, Marcia McKnight, about it, and she was just so kind about calling around and finding out where I could shower on campus. And I remember just thinking, oh my goodness, the secretaries here actually help you. Mm-hmm. At the junior high school, they kind of directed you and supervised you, and you wouldn't be asking them to do any favors mm-hmm. for you. So I was surprised. I was so surprised, and Marcia was one of the first people who was just so warm and kind. And then Ann Kemmer, who had been on my search committee, started to invite me to dinners and spend time with her. And I was just surprised at how And I'm an introvert by nature, and everybody just reached out and seemed to be interested in doing whatever they could to make my time here feel good and to also be productive. Mm-hmm. So it seemed very warm and friendly to me, coming from where I had come from. Mm-hmm. And that everybody here took themselves seriously as professionals. They were really interested in doing well in their programs and doing well for students. And I make that contrast because I don't know what public schools are like now, but I found that in the junior high school, I had, you know, had that first difficult first year, but after that had adjusted, had become a good classroom teacher, supervised the student newspaper, was well liked by students, and well liked by most of the faculty in my department. But I found that a lot of faculty members were very unhappy there. A lot of teachers there were very unhappy. They didn't like what they were doing. They were very critical of students. They were very critical of supervisors. And I thought, I didn't feel like there was very much motivation to excel mm-hmm. as a teacher. And I was taking additional classes, and I wasn't getting a lot of support from my department chair. I felt like the message was, be in your classroom 5 periods a day, don't send too many students to the office. And that's what we want from you. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I can't spend the next 30, 35 years of my professional life doing this. I had to get out. Mm-hmm. So the university was wonderful. I mean, there are all kinds of... I'm a person who's internally motivated, but that can only go so far. The university offers a lot of external rewards to help motivate you. Mm-hmm. Just the promotion process and sabbatical leaves, and there are awards that you can win. I just thought that there were all kinds of things that were incentives to me to really work hard and excel. And I love that about the university. And, you know, I'm not sure that all faculty members have the same appreciation for the university that I have because of the background that I mm-hmm. came from. It was like coming into a candy store. You know, people were kind and helpful, and there were so many things to be done, and you got recognized and rewarded for doing it, you know, an exceptional job. So I thought it was great.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about your campus activities you've been involved in since you've been here?
Mm-hmm. Well, since I've been here for 27 years, I've been involved in a lot. but I can tell you, I can still remember the first time I decided to actively seek a leadership position. I was on the tenure and sabbatical committee, and I had been on it for couple of years. I must have come on to it after tenure, because you can't be on the university-wide one unless you're tenured. So I remember watching the individual who was chairing and thinking, well, this person isn't very well organized, or these meetings don't have much of an agenda, or it's not really clear. And I kept thinking, you know, this person ought to do this and this and this. So when this person stepped down and people were looking for a chair, I said, well, I'll chair. Because I thought, well, I think I could do this at least as well, if not better, than my predecessor. And I've been on and chaired the promotion committee. I chaired the women's studies committee, and then when that became a position that carried a release time for one course with it, I became the director of women's studies for many years. And then, of course, I got very involved with the union. I was a department representative, and then I was elected at-large member to the executive committee, and then I served as Provost Williams' vice president when he was the president, and then when he became the interim. You know, it actually took me a while we were so excited about his transition from being department chair and ask of president to becoming the interim provost, that it didn't occur to me until after a week or so that meant that I was going to be the ASCA mm-hmm. president. It's like, oh my God, you know. And then, of course, I've won several elections. I've been the ASCA president for 5 years, and I've just been elected to another 2-year term. And I've sat on the President's Commission for the Status of Women. I was the chair of that for a while. Oh, and I just got elected department chair to the English department. So I kind of, you know, I feel like I followed the progression that any responsible faculty member does who has a long career here. The first couple of years you spend your time kind of being quiet and trying to figure out what's going on, at least that's what I did. And then you start to serve on committees, and then when one feels comfortable and well-informed enough, you begin to assume leadership positions at a higher and higher level. Mm. And so that's what I've done.
Okay. You've already mentioned some of them, but can you talk about some of your favorite accomplishments since you've been here?
I think that they would probably be tied to the Women's Studies program. When I first got involved, I didn't feel it was a very inclusive group. And I feel like I took a small program, and while it's not a big program, I believe it's become a lot more visible in the university. And I spent a lot of time developing out-of-the-classroom kinds of programming to make sure our name was in front of people. Some of my favorite programs that I established was we do an annual poetry and prose reading that students and faculty participate in. It's every December. We have a leadership and mentoring dinner, which would occur every professional development day in the spring, and have a variety of speakers. I can remember coming up with that idea and thinking, well, our program's budget wasn't enough to pay for dinner for everybody, but what if I invited all faculty, staff, and administrators to come and invite students to come, you know, and be their hosts, pay for their dinners for the evening? That could be a very inexpensive program for the Women's Studies program. And we could kind of celebrate the fact that faculty mentor students. This is an event they could take them to. And we would always have a relatively local speaker, who a woman who had risen to some sort of a leadership position. If she, that person would come for an overnight stay at the Apple Butter Inn, and they would talk about, in a very personal way, how they had moved forward and who they had mentored and who the mentors in their life were. And I thought, well, okay, we're going to do this. I thought, now what if you, it's like one of those, what if you give a party and nobody shows up? Mm-hmm. But the first year, 60 people came. The next year, 80 people came. The next year, 120 people came. And then when it started to edge up towards 130, the staff center, the university club, was too small to hold us. So then we moved over to the little private dining room, and it's not the small private dining room, but the smaller dining room in Boozle. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of hung out there between 125 and 130 over the last several years. And we've combined that dinner with the Women of Distinction Awards, and people just seem to really like that. I've introduced Luna Fest, which is a women's film festival that happens every fall. So I think it's really taking the Women's Studies program, building its base among faculty who either teach in it or feel welcome to participate even if they don't teach in it, expanding the number of programs that it does to try to keep itself visible. And I mean, we've had some big name speakers here. Patricia Ireland, who was the president of the National Organization for Women, was here. And I'm going to blank on other names at this point, but I've written a number of grants to bring speakers who we ordinarily couldn't afford to come here. I'm thinking of like Elaine Brown, who was the only woman to ever lead the Black Panthers. She came one semester. So I think it's really the work that I've done for women's studies that is among my major accomplishments. And then, of course, my work with ABSCUF, the faculty union. I've worked with our faculty now through two very contentious negotiations, and I had a wonderful staff here to work with, but I think together we kept the faculty well informed, ready to do whatever they needed to do, but still reasonable and rational in their behavior and their expectations. And when I look around at some of my sister institutions, I don't always see that happening elsewhere. So I have an excellent faculty to work with, and they've been very supportive. So I think that just continuing to keep ABSCUF as a vital and well-supported organization is something I'm proud of.
Okay. Do you have any best and worst teaching moments?
Well, best, you know, and I would have to say, not particular moments, but I've so enjoyed teaching the Intro to Women's Studies class that I would sometimes lead that class, and I always teach it as an evening class at 5 to 7:30. Sometimes those classes were so good, the conversation was so good, and you could see little light bulbs going on, mm-hmm. and people were willing to participate, and it was energetic, and I would leave that class sometimes thinking, I can't believe I get paid to do this. You know, it's just so much fun. And probably my worst moments have come in that class as well, but really only one. There was one semester where there was a young man in class who just came in with a really hostile attitude, and that, I mean, it's not unusual for there to be two or three or four young men in those classes, but I've never encountered hostility from them before, mm-hmm. and boy, I did with that individual, and it made every class trying for both me and his peers. Mm-hmm. But in terms of singling out one aha moment, no, not really.
Okay. All right. Can you shed any light on leaders in terms of presence, things like that, from a personal standpoint? You know, we have their names, but we'd like to kind of get a feeling for them.
Well, when I looked at this question, I kind of probably blended it with the question below it, because the only reason I would know these movers and shakers is because they influenced me in some way. I would say Anne Griffiths, who was she the dean when I started to work with her? She may have been already the dean. But she was one of those individuals who likes to claim that she can see potential in faculty members, and that when she met me, she thought that I was capable of great things. And so she reached out to me and encouraged me to serve on committees sometimes with her. She always used to tell me the story about geese, that she was a lead goose. You know, she was always out in front flapping her wings, and all the geese behind her could kind of benefit from that because they were following her and they were kind of in her airstream. But that those lead geese get tired, and that they need to have the geese who are behind them come forward. And I was one of those geese behind her that she kept trying to push towards the front. So she was just very helpful to me, and I admired her because she seemed strong and forthright and assertive, and didn't back down from conflict. So I just had a lot of respect for her, and was really glad that she and I were friends. I don't know what it would have been like to work as a faculty member for her. Like, I was never in her mm-hmm. college. So that probably helped too, yeah. You know? I could just get to enjoy the qualities of leadership that I saw in her without ever having to be subjected to mm-hmm. them. I remember only vaguely, though, Bob McCoskey. I knew how involved he was with the environmental movement here and the setting up of Harmony House and the Sustainable Systems Program. But he also struck me as just being a very wise man. Mm-hmm. Anytime I ever heard him speak, he had a wonderful sense of humor and an understanding of the university as an organization and faculty members' place within it. So I remember he did a presentation for women's studies at my request once, and so he was very accommodating. And I remember his death, and I remember we had a memorial service at the ski lodge. And it was packed. Not everybody could get into it. And I remember how touched I was by how many faculty members came out to honor him, and made me proud to be a part of that group who shared that common respect for this individual. Mm-hmm. I really wish I had known him better. And Bob Ebersold, again, as a faculty member, you don't work so closely with the president. I wasn't ASCOF president at that time. But he, too, always seemed very friendly. And actually, I was scared to death of him at first when he was the provost, because my chair at the time, Harry Budd, had not used funds wisely for the Act 101 program. And I think maybe had run out of funds and needed to go to the provost to get additional funding. And he dragged me along with him. And I didn't have anything to say, but I was there. And Bob Ebersold just unloaded on me. I mean, he walked around and he yelled at him. I just kept cringing. Oh, I wish I wasn't here. I wish I wasn't here. But he was absolutely charming to me when he was the president. I didn't proofread Focus, the Women's Studies newsletter, well enough, and his name appeared on the front page misspelled. Mm. But he was very kind about, but very pointed about, please don't make sure this happens again. I over the years, have had conflict with consistently with one other faculty member on campus, to the degree that all other faculty knew about it, and it was unhealthy. And Bob Ebersold was aware of that. This person frequently wrote letters to the president about me, and I can remember Ebersold pulling me aside at an ASCOF social. We have them at the end of each semester to honor people who are retiring. And saying to me something like, you know, I just want you to know that I know that you're doing a good job, and I don't pay any attention to what so-and-so says, and I just want you to not worry about this. And I thought, well, that was a really kind thing of him to do. He didn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. So I really liked Bob Ebersold. I regret that I didn't get to work as ASCOF president when he was here. And then I'll just mention one other person. Mark Selman, who was in our public administration department. And I'm not sure, by the time I knew Mark, he seemed to be a fairly senior faculty member. And my sense is that he held leadership positions. He may have chaired the department, I'm not sure. He may have chaired promotions and tenure. But he would frequently join a number of us at the lunch table in the University Club Staff Center at the time. And he was just very, very funny, but so supportive of faculty members. And there were two things that I remember him saying all the time. He would complete his, and he was a big union supporter as well, and a big promoter of the CBA, the Contractual Bargaining Agreement. And he would complete his lunch hour each day by getting up and saying, I must return to my office to fulfill my contractual obligations. In other words, he had an office hour or a class to teach. And I just remember, I just thought it was so funny that he would do that, that he would say that over and over again. And then he was of the opinion that all faculty members were valuable, all faculty members were working as hard as they could, and that he believed that we should all support one another, even in the promotion process. He didn't feel that the University Promotion Committee should rank people low. He didn't feel that the University Promotion Committee should ever choose to not recommend somebody. His entire philosophy was, promote them all. Promote them all every year. You ought to promote them all. You know? And I always liked that about Mark as well. So I have very fond memories of Mark Selman. And of course, well, Wilma Cavill, she's still here. Mm-hmm. But Wilma and I have been friends for years, and she's been, again, very, very instrumental, you know, in terms of reaching out to me and saying, well, you should get involved with this, or I'll do this with you, or, you know, I'll support you if you want to do this. So I guess those are the people whose names come to mind.
Okay. Can you think of any major events that took place, whether it be, you know, a national event or something on campus that you bear witness to while you were here?
I remember when the psychology department picketed. Did they picket Old Main? They must have. It's when the psychology department was being moved from BSB to Vincent Science Hall, and they didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so they picketed at one point with signs about, we won't go. They went. If administration wants to move you, you go. You really can't not go. But I thought that was pretty funny. Weather events, I remember a day, it was, I know there was snow. They closed, it was Bob Abersall, he closed school, but not because of the snow, but because the temperatures had dropped to like below zero.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a good idea to be outside. And I remember that he walked all over campus yelling at students who were outside, saying, get back to your residence halls, get back to your residence halls. I guess if he thought he was going to, you know, shut down school for the day, he wasn't going to have people playing outside.
Mm.
Well, and of course, you know, probably everybody remembers what they were doing when 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
I remember coming into school and finding the hallways empty and faculty members sitting in a classroom with their eyes glued to a screen. The first plane had hit. I didn't have the news on. And just as I sat down, the second plane hit. And it was that was the first day that our new dean, Dean McKinney, was going to have his first college meeting. And of course, he simply invited us into an auditorium, and we watched TV on the screen. There wasn't any way that we would have a meeting here. Gosh, I feel like I'm probably missing all kinds of things, but that's really what comes to my mind.
Okay. This question, you know, doesn't really pertain to you because you're obviously still here, but mm-hmm. What do you think you'll miss most when you leave?
Oh, probably my colleagues. It's been, I think I already spoke about this, but so this probably started maybe 10 or 12 years ago, that the first of the individuals who had meant a lot to me started to retire. And I think I would have to say that I'm a very mentally healthy person, but I was probably depressed for a semester. I didn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was because people who I had seen on almost a daily basis and had spent a lot of time talking with and laughing with and working with weren't in my life any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also hard to see how institutions go on. You know, we all consider ourselves to be so important and so significant, but it's sort of like, you know, Jell-O. It just, you leave and the hole doesn't stay there for very long. It just closes up right behind you. And that was a very hard recognition that was hard for me to come to grips with. And even now, I had one of my best friends retire, and you know, I wonder what that's going to do to our relationship, because with most of my relationships with people who have retired, I don't see them very often any longer. And it's, I don't know, well, you probably know what it's like as a student. You get to be such close friends, and you think those friendships which are intense are going to last forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you suddenly don't find yourself in the same context anymore. And I know you can make an effort, but when so much of your conversation, everything is about what's happening right here,
right.
It's just not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I will miss my colleagues. I'm not sure I'll miss teaching, because, you know, I've been in the classroom now for 34 years, and I'm actually not going to be in the classroom for the first time in the fall, because the department's so large that you get 9 hours three course release to do the department chair, and then I still do the AFSCA presidency,
mm-hmm.
which is one course release. But I started to feel a little burned out in the classroom. And, you know, my attitude about the classroom has always been that I can't expect students to be excited about with what we're doing unless I go in and I'm excited. And I've been able to do that, but I feel like I've had to force it more the last couple of years. It's just seemed so routine, despite the fact that I change books or change assignments, but it just seems so routine that the preparation and the going in into the classroom is just like, oh, I have to do this again. You know, so I'm hoping maybe after 2 years without being in the classroom, maybe I'll feel like, oh, I really miss that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I had my first experience with distance education this summer, which isn't the same thing at all. So I don't know if I'll miss being in the classroom or not. I have to discover that. I hope that I do. And I think that I'll miss my colleagues, and I may end up missing being in the center of things.
Yeah.
Because I've held so many leadership positions, and because of my work with ABSCA, I'm at the center of everything, and obviously I must enjoy that, or I wouldn't keep doing it. You know, I've always liked to know what's going on, and not be receiving it second and third hand. I usually am directly on the receiving end of anything that's important going on.
Of everyone we've interviewed, the retired faculty who are involved in things like ABSCA, things like that. You know, the pattern we find is no one ever really leaves. You know, they're always still involved in it in some way, because they always stay local and they keep their hand in the mix, so to speak.
Yeah,
so.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Okay, do you have any words of wisdom for current or future Rock community members from your experience?
I guess I would always recommend to new faculty members to begin carefully, to never assume that you know all the answers, that you know what the right thing is to do. There's so much to be learned, and that if you want to be successful here, I think that you have to spend some time being more of a listener and an observer than a talker and an actor. And so I try to encourage newer faculty members to just proceed slowly for those first couple of years. That doesn't mean not do anything, but to kind of just proceed slowly and cautiously and spend a lot more time listening before you step up, because I think that provides a good basis then for being a successful faculty member in the future. And I guess what I think would make Slippery Rock generally a better place would be if we were all a little bit more kind and generous with one another. You know, faculty, and I certainly would include students with that, and in fact that's something, if I were to reflect on my teaching, that is something that I think I have become over the years, is to be a little bit more flexible with students, a little bit more generous with students, a little kinder and more empathetic with students. And I guess I would like to see faculty do that more with each other. We tend to be so hypercritical of everything. Peter Albo used to make a distinction between what he called the doubting game and the believing game. And he said academics are great at the doubting game, that their education, in a sense, has prepared them to be critical of everything, to start out by saying why something won't work, and what the problems are going to be. And he thinks that the classroom would work better and communities might work better if we played more of the believing game, where if instead of being super critical right from the beginning, you try something on for a while. You let yourself think in terms of, well, maybe this could work, or maybe we should try this. And I guess I would like to see people play more of the believing game than they do right now. I sometimes think maybe we could arrive at more and better solutions than we do.
Okay. And lastly, how would you like to be remembered?
Strong union leader, good classroom teacher, a feminist educator. You know, somebody who was kind, somebody who reached out to people.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to bring up before we...
No, I'm exhausted.
All right, Dr. Dreary, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
On behalf of myself and the rest of the library staff, you've been a great help. And anytime you want to come back, just gotta give us a call. We'll be happy to have you.
Okay.